21.
Amend contract with Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, Inc. to increase the not-to-exceed amount to $119,992 to continue to employ the gang-impacted family team coordinator to provide support for program stakeholders serving gang-impacted youth and families.
So we have some presenters here for this morning. I'm very pleased to see this here. We're experiencing some record-high gang violence in our city. It's happening across the country, but it's happening here too. And we're doing some things that we believe are the right approach. They don't necessarily all show results right away, but they do, I think, move us in the right direction. One is our community centers initiative. Commissioner Fritz and I were out at Dishman Community Center last week, and the kids are signing up for free passes, and it's a wonderful thing to see, and it's a wonderful thing for our city to do to give positive opportunities to young people. We put 5 new gang outreach workers in our budget, so we're now providing coverage out in the community on the street where young people are hanging out 7 days a week. And we have some great work being done in the community by groups like Enough is Enough that are campaigning to end violence neighbor to neighbor and friend to friend. So the gang-impacted family team is an important part of this effort, and we have some presenters here to talk to us about this proposal. Tom Peavy is here. I think Antoinette Edwards may be here. I'm not sure if she is or not, but she's uncharacteristically hiding behind something if she is. Marcy Jackson is coming, so DA Underhill's here. So come on up, please, and we'll get this underway, and appreciate you being here this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Good morning. Underhill, do you want to leave it off?
Well, I sure can, although I think we've set it up for Tom Peavy to give us a background and experience. So kick it over to him.
We'll have Tom cue it up for you.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. Good morning, Mayor and members of City Council. I am Tom Peavy, the Policy Manager for the Office of Youth Violence Prevention and a member of the Gang Impacted Family Team, or GIFT. I am seated with other GIFT team members who will shortly offer information in brief as to the nature of the GIFT program and the GIFT coordinator's role and importance. Today we are requesting City Council approval to amend grant funding for the gang-impacted family team coordinator position to be continued through the 2016-2017 fiscal year. GIFT was initiated in 2012 through the joint vision of the Portland Police Bureau and the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. The intended use of the GIFT program was to stop intergenerational gang affiliation and violence. GIFT is comprised of members or individuals from the Portland Police Bureau, the City of Portland Mayor's Office of Youth Violence Prevention, Multnomah County Department of Human Services, Multnomah County Department of Criminal Justice, Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council, and several private nonprofit organizations offering reentry programming and trauma counseling services. The GIFT program vision is to identify and to link high-risk gang-impacted individuals to include family members with needed services. Once service needs have been established, the GIFT team communicates with at-risk individuals and families and offers direct or referral service assistance. The desired outcome is to promote pro-social behavior and to break the cycle of gang affiliation and violence. Discovered in 2012 was a need for a full-time coordinator position to connect stakeholder service organizations with GIFT client needs and to provide follow-up information on service history and client status. The GIFT coordinator position was established in 2013 based on a noted best practice program in Cincinnati, Ohio, entitled Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence. Since 2013, the funding for the GIFT coordinator position has been provided through a 2-year grant awarded to the City of Portland by the State of Oregon Youth Development Council. After the State of Oregon grant concluded in 2014, continued one-time funding was applied to the GIFT coordinator position approved by City Council, provided through the Portland Police Bureau 2015-2016 fiscal year budget. Since 2013, the GIFT coordinator position grant funding has been awarded to Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, or POIC, a local private nonprofit organization that specializes in service to gang-impacted youth and their families. POIC currently staffs the following programs which coordinate referral services with the GIFT program. the Street Level Gang Outreach Program, which serves to build relationships with other programs in the community for the purposes of connecting gang members, associates, and/or their families to educational, social, medical, and employment-related services, and the Community Healing Initiative, or CHI, which utilizes a culturally specific whole family program model to provide wraparound services to gang-involved, primarily adjudicated youth and their families. Currently, the GIFT program is actively serving 21 clients and their families. Members of the GIFT team are here with me today to provide input into the nature and importance of the GIFT services supplied to clients and the essential nature of the GIFT program coordinator position. I'll turn it over to Rod.
Well, good morning again, Mayor Hales and members of the city commissioners. I couldn't be more supportive of the GIFT-based program. The GIFT program began as a very organic, what do we need, what's missing in our efforts to help reduce gang violence and intergenerational gang violence. What we were seeing, quite literally, boots on the ground, was second, third, and moving towards potentially a fourth generation of ongoing gang violence within families. We also knew that we had a tremendous amount of resources in this community, but were we effectively organizing our resources and were we using those resources on the most important gang-impacted families possible? And so with those kind of general kernels of ideas, the Portland Police Bureau members, specifically it was then Lieutenant Tom McGranahan, myself and others, got together and started having conversations. Commissioner Saltzman, this may ring a bell with you. We used some of the models, if you will, from the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence. It was Tom McGranahan and I back in the 90s that worked on domestic violence cases, and we had worked together in identifying families that were most impacted by domestic violence, and could we organize and do better in that area? And the answer was yes, and we did it. So in 2012, we took some of that work, we moved it into the gang conversation, and began to have ideas about we need to bring people who have not always historically sat around the table and talked about specific individuals, specific families. What are we doing? Are we having redundancy? And if so, let's spread out those resources, use them more effectively. But more importantly, what are we missing? What services are we not giving, not just to the individual who's maybe involved in gang-involved activity, but their family members, their sons, daughters, mothers, fathers? What can we do from a holistic approach? And so out of that organic conversation began really members of your community in the public safety conversations getting together and coming up with these good ideas. We quickly realized we were onto something. So as a result of that, we needed coordination. We needed somebody to really help us do this work in a more organized fashion because we were doing it out of already existing resources. That's where the GIFT coordinator idea just became almost critical right out of the gate because we knew we were onto something and we needed some additional help. So we reached out. We got some funding early on. You've heard about that from Tom here, about that first year's worth of work. And boy, did we hit a home run. We just really realized that this was critically important to one of the areas in our efforts to help reduce gang-involved activity and their connected family members. We were very fortunate in seeing that when the initial grant funding expired, the city was more than willing to recognize the value of this program, step up and fund it, and work with an obviously tremendous organization in POIC. And so I couldn't be more enthusiastic about encouraging you to continue that partnership, that good work, and continue the funding of the coordinator position.
Great. Thank you very much.
And I'd like to pass this off to the GIFT coordinator, who's Deborah Kim.
Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Kim, and I am the Gang Impacted Family Team coordinator. I would like to give Mayor and Council an idea of the amount of people being served through GIFT. The information being presented is data collected beginning April. GIFT has made contact with a total of 21 people, ranging from the ages of 17 to 37. Total number of people actively seeking services is 16, and this is a combination of both gang members as well as impacted family members. To clarify, impacted family members would include both intermediate family members, relatives, and others, such as significant others. Of the 16 actively seeking services, 10 have successfully been connected to services. Such services range from connecting clients to jobs, helping them to re-enroll back in school, and connecting them to any housing resources and more. The total number of people in gift group currently is 13, which ranges from the age which age range is from 20 to 29. Gift group consists of gang members that are currently on probation and parole, and it is the group that is formed through the Department of Community Justice, facilitated by Volunteers of America, the Community Partners Reinvestment, as well as GIFT. So now that I've covered a couple of statistics, I just wanted to share a success story that I believe highlights the importance of GIFTs and GIFT strengths. Recently, a young lady who was released from being incarcerated for 2 years seeks support in developing job readiness skills as well as finding employment. And upon building rapport and being consistent in consistent contact, she followed a job lead and found a job. One day, she randomly texted me a photo of her uniform saying how excited she was to be employed at a fast food restaurant. Though this may seem like a very, very small gesture to all of us, I think this speaks volume as she is one who is open to speaking to a service provider and somebody in a social service field. And she is an example of somebody who is excited and willing to share news. Where oftentimes in this specific population, they are very guarded and they keep to themselves. Thank you.
So it's actually, a question comes to mind, which is actually good to have DA Underhill here to help answer it. But I think somebody seeing this contract or hearing this presentation might say, well, gosh, you know, $120,000 and you're only dealing with, you know, a few dozen people at a time. Is that cost effective? I don't know if you keep this statistic in your head, but I'm wondering what the typical cost of prosecution for a Measure 11 crime might be.
You know, Mayor, I don't have that statistic in my head, but I can say it's expensive.
Yeah.
We've got the cost, obviously, of the not just the prosecution function, the law enforcement function. We've got the impact of the community and the crime victims themselves, and these.
It's what, $50,000 a year to keep somebody in state prison. And,
yes.
Yeah, so you add it all up, it's probably $100,000 a case, right? Yeah. So we're spending $100,000 a per for.
Yeah. It's expensive, and it's not what we want to do. I mean, you have a district attorney's office that I think is very capable and very good at needing to prosecute offenders who engage in behavior such that they need to be sent to prison. But we'd like to do things differently. We'd like to actually not have that be the end result of each and every one of these cases. And that's really at the core of this. That's what the GIFT program is all about, is we want to stop that intergenerational, what's occurring.
One person getting a job, you know, that's a small thing, as you said, Deborah, but no, it's not. Compared to what?
Yeah, and local jail is expensive. It is $200 a day, or very close to that, in most recent calculations, to keep somebody even here in our local jail. Prison, you're close to your knock on the door of about $100 a day. But those are just tangible expenses that we can actually put a dollar figure to, but there are so many intangibles that this program is extremely valuable to. And that's why we made it the family-based program, is we've been working for years and years and years with just the individual, right, and that prosecution effort and that probation effort. But we lifted our chin up a little bit. We looked around and we saw, hey, each and every one of these individuals, oftentimes young men, they've got children, they've got siblings, they've got mothers and fathers that are oftentimes impacted by what we're talking about. And can we reach out to them? And that's really where we're making the difference, I think.
Rod, I'm just curious in terms of the profile of the gang activity that you're seeing. We've got young people that have deep roots in our community, but we also have gangs that are moving here or expanding their presence here. Could you speak to that?
Well, we started seeing the most prolific kind of involvement in gang activity in the mid-80s. And those of us who are doing this work remember, mostly what we saw was an infusion of California-based gangs moving up quite literally I-5 and setting up stakes here. We've since then had a meaningful presence of gangs. Now, we have gangs of all, all diversities. We have black gangs, Hispanic gangs. We have white gangs. Quite literally, my gang prosecutor is in a murder bail hearing prosecuting behavior associated with a motorcycle gang who we allege committed a murder as part of what they do. We're seeing a lot of different things. We're seeing these multi-generational gangs that I've talked about, but we're also seeing gangs coming in from outside of our jurisdiction. They engage in criminal behavior to include many things, such as human trafficking, for example. We're seeing gangs that are moving victims of trafficking around up and down I-5 over to Las Vegas, down to Sacramento, Los Angeles, up to Seattle, sometimes Vancouver, B.C. Those are often gang-involved. They're not homegrown gang-involved members. They come from another jurisdiction, but we're part of how they make their money, what they do. They come, they leave, some stay. We just see a lot of different things in this area.
And to what extent, Rod, is the explosion in cheap heroin and some of these and drugs like that aggravating the situation?
Right. Well, you know, for years and years, we saw a lot of gang-involved trafficking of controlled substances as a large, you know, methodology for revenue and such for gang-involved members. And certainly we still see that. And for some of the reasons that you've just remarked on. But I should also add, and I think it's very important, the gang members are organized, they're creative, they've moved into areas such as trafficking in firearms, and as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, human trafficking. They're making a significant, they've diversified their business efforts to historically be things along the lines of drug trafficking, but now to include other behaviors as well.
Final question, Rod. And by the way, it's a pleasure to have you here. We should do this more often because you're at the front lines, your frontline partner in some and many of these challenges. So I'm making some changes in my life that have resulted in more walking, less driving. So I'm seeing at the street level more of the impacts of what seems to be a big spike in drug use. People that are whose behavior is sort of out of control.
Yes.
And that has huge ripple effects. To feed a habit, you got to engage in, you got to, you know, break into cars, break into homes. You got to feed the habit. You're the likelihood that you're following basic rules of society begin to sort of fall apart. So we look to these innovative programs to use unconventional ways of addressing behavior. But we need jail beds for some people, and we need treatment beds for others. If the mayor offered you a dollar, and you had to prioritize how you would spend that dollar in among those three things, how would you rank them?
I'm going to rank it with prevention, number one. I'm going to spend most of that dollar on prevention and treatment. In fact, I've had conversations with most of you about a program that we're working very aggressively on, the LEAD program, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. It's a program that was piloted out of Seattle in 2011. It came about as a long conversation surrounding many of the things, Commissioner Fish, that I think you've summarized in what you said relative to walking around parts of our city. We're seeing addiction-based issues. When we're talking about traffickers of controlled substance who are not trafficking to satisfy their addiction, but instead trafficking for profit, we're going to look at that person differently than most of what we see. And I think most of what you're probably thinking of as you made those comments. And that is a person who is challenged by addiction relative to a controlled substance, whether that be heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, or some other types of controlled substances. The LEAD program showed a marked success in Seattle. They've been studied by an independent research analysis done by the University of Washington. They've seen several remarkable kind of changes relative to that program. They focused on the Belltown region of Seattle, which, as I generally understand it, is kind of downtown core, but a little bit north, but not unlike our downtown core area, where they had open drug trafficking and open drug use. It was just happening in open air. And one of the things that they did is they implemented this harm reduction model. It's recognizing that addiction is not you can't just turn off that switch and require that person necessarily to stop cold turkey, but instead recognize that small, meaningful advancements in a person's life are valuable as well. And so what they've seen is some remarkable results as part of that program. The individuals within that program, and at any given time, they tend to have about 250 to 300 individuals in that program, not unlike what we might experience in our downtown core area. They work with case managers, and they've seen statistics – I didn't come totally equipped, so I don't want to get this wrong, but I think I've got a decent command. In the neighborhood of in excess of 50%, the number 58 comes to mind, reduction in recidivism in a two-year window of time based on individuals that are part of that LEAD program. It's really taken a totally different approach to drug addiction scenarios. It's really putting that dollar before jails and prosecution. You do have to have the law enforcement component because that's where LEAD comes from. It's law enforcement assisted diversion. You do have to have your police. They are involved in that front end. But where it changes is, should we send this case to the district attorney's office for classic court-involved criminal prosecution, or can we do something different? So there's
my last question. I got a briefing from Steve's team on Vision Zero yesterday, okay. And we were talking about obviously education and outreach, but we're also talking about enforcement of the law.
Yes.
And I'm going to push in our next legislative agenda for us to get tougher on DUI. And when we read about someone who stopped for the 30th and they're on the street, the person that carries a loaded gun around and is arrested 30 times, the public at some point would say, why are we so lenient? The person that gets into a car, which is a loaded gun, impaired and puts people at risk, to me is no different. And I understand there's some politics around this in terms of the liquor industry and people's concerns about the law. But I think my own view is we have to get tougher on DUI. And I think that's an area we would welcome your feedback as we craft our legislative proposal. Obviously, there are big obstacles to getting reform on this issue in the short term. I'd like to play for the longer term. But I think some of the recent stories about people who have repeat DUIs and are still on the road just don't make sense to the average person. And I think our laws need to be updated.
I look forward to continuing those conversations, and I think you'll find myself and other members of my office a useful tool to help analyze, assess, look at the laws, look at where we might suggest some adjustments, improvements, and look forward to those continued conversations, Commissioner.
On a related note, in addition to strong enforcement, one way to reduce DUIs and also a variety of other criminal behavior is to simply raise the price of alcohol. So I hope that you will join us in once again asking the legislature to raise the beer and wine tax or at least authorize local governments to adopt such taxes.
So I was curious, getting back to the gift program.
Yes, Commissioner.
How do you, what are the criteria for an individual to be in the program? They have to be on parole and probation, have a family that's extensively involved in gang involvement, is that correct? And it's 21 and it's 21 year capacity, or is that just the number you're serving right now?
Oh, we have Brian from DCJ. I'm going to let him take my seat and explain to you, answer your questions. So, Brian.
Come on up, Brian. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Brian Smith. I'm the supervisor in the Department of Community Justice Gang Unit. And so just to answer your question, so what we do is we identify inside the gang unit and Department of Community Justice those active gang members who have generational issues as far as gangs go. And so generally we would say that they have to have at least one other family member who has been involved in gang violence or been involved in gangs, either their father or their cousin or their brothers, or, you know, and in most of these cases that we have, it's more than one family member, it's multiple family members, and in the majority of the cases, it's father to son to grandson is the type of gang member that we're trying to serve and we're trying to focus on so that we can kind of, really get to the core of some of these active gangs in our community, which generally the core of these gangs are ran and operated by generational gang members. Those are usually the leadership of these organizations, and so we're really trying to target those people and then their families around.
Is 21 an artificial cap just based on how many you can serve, or is that it? Is that the number of individuals with intergenerational gang involvement in our community?
That isn't necessarily the cap. That's just currently what we have. We go through things of, we've screened people before, and we go through a screening process through Deborah, and then we have two mentors that are on contract with the Department of Community Justice who specifically are mentors for the gang members inside the gift program, and we screen them, and some are not appropriate. Some are doing other positive things in their life, and You know, the GIF program is not for them, and others may be appropriate, but they, you know, they're in refusal, and they refuse to participate, or they've refused to get services, and so there's other avenues that we have to go and try to supervise and rehabilitate those individuals.
Okay. Commissioner, another comment on that point, because I'll go back a little bit to 2012 when we first started. All right, what are we going to try and tackle? And quite literally, it was, again, one of those organic conversations, but it was, and I'll use Commissioner Fish's kind of, if we had a dollar, meaning if you had some resources, what would you do with it? How would you prioritize it? And at that time, let's everybody at the table bring together your most deeply involved, just anecdotal, right, in your head, who are the most deeply involved gang-impacted families in our community? And so everybody came with some, quite literally, some names. It was not just 21. It was not just 25. My memory goes back to we had 40. We had some, you know, 50. But we had to spend that dollar wise. So we had to recognize that we have resource implications. So let's cull it down and let's hyper-focus on, at that time, it started with the top 25, if you will. So there's some flexibility with respect to it. There still is, as there always is, some resource implications to most everything we do. While at the same time, I'd like to think that we touch everybody that we possibly can in some way.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything else you want to add, Brian?
No, let me just give a brief overview of what the Department of Community Justice does with the GIF program. Is we're just, you know, we're a partner along with other agencies that we've heard about. And so inside the Department of Community Justice, what we do is we identify these core of the most significant generational gang members, and we run a group weekly. And we have mentors through Volunteers of America, as well as a counselor through Volunteers of America, who facilitate that group, as well as myself, who does some facilitation. And what we're doing now is we've recently purchased a curriculum that is culturally specific to the population that we're dealing with. And we're about to install this 9-month curriculum for these individuals to go through, which includes not only rehabilitation efforts, cognitive restructuring type of assignments, but community service, advocacy, you know, those kinds of things, to where it's a pretty wide stretch of things that these guys have to do. And so we're about to install that into our groups. And so how the GIF coordinator fits into this is that we have so many individuals who have so many needs, and whether it be substance abuse or employment or even mental health, you know, we're dealing with a lot of individuals who've been traumatized and need trauma-informed care because of the violence that they've experienced, because of the, you know, all of the problems that exist in gang life, shootings, those kinds of things. And so we're trying to provide some trauma-informed care through the coordination of the GIF coordinator, setting some of these services up so these individuals can have some therapy because of what they've been through, and because I think they have to address those issues before they can move forward. Not to mention, we deal with the gang member inside the Department of Community Justice, and we do the best we can to try to deal with victims and family members, but a lot of times our focus has to be on the safety and the rehabilitation, safety of the community and the rehabilitation of the gang member. And we need to have the families and the victims and the witnesses also addressed to provide services for them, and that's where the GIF coordinator comes in, to try to really provide services for those individuals, helping them maybe even relocate if they've been a witness or a victim, helping them provide services to their children, the parents of these the gang members and their children, the mothers of some of these some of the children of these gang members need services like daycare and, you know, and camps for their kids and diapers and basic needs. And so she does an outstanding job on trying to really provide services for the entire family, and in collaboration with us, who we're trying to provide services for the gang member itself. So that's kind of in a nutshell what we got.
Thank you.
Mayor, just one other comment with our friends here. Last year, I did a police ride-along with members of the GET team. And by 10 o'clock at night, it was a routine night. By 1 o'clock, it was the bloodiest night in history, and in recent history. And I got to appreciate how hard those jobs are, just being around people that are dead and dying and grieving. But the thing that struck me the most was when we stopped by Jefferson, a football game, and the number of relationships the officers had with young people. And I'm not so old that I don't remember when I was younger and the impact of having people know my name and have eyes and ear, you know, watching me. And all of us during those, you know, difficult years need people looking out for us. And the fact that the officers knew so many people by first name, knew the families, could engage people, was very impressive. And to be able to balance that with the sort of with the other part of the job, which is really unspeakable when you're at a crime scene and there's some of the things we observed, I had a deep appreciation for the work that they did and for the value of maintaining those human connections and building those relationships, the community policing part. And I think this point you make about upstream investments and prevention, I wish we almost every year had a gathering of people here where we talked about collectively what are those upstream things, because the thing the public I think is on our side on upstream investments, and I think what is less clear to the public is how the costs of not doing enough upstream are distributed among everybody. We externalize those costs and we impose them across society. If people actually understood how much money we are spending dealing with the wrong end of the problem, I think they would be demanding more investments upstream. And so appreciate your good work.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Very much. Thanks for being here this morning. We have some of the other partners in this effort, Antoinette, Julie, I'm not sure if you're planning, and folks from Volunteers for America are here. So we've got other participants in this partnership. And actually, speaking of that, that conversation that happens among people about upstream, that happens every 2 weeks under your leadership. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Not really a lot to add to that. I just want to
put your name in the record, Antoinette.
Oh, Antoinette Edwards, Director of the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, Mayor Hales. The GIVE program is holistic. It really provides an opportunity for folks to say, if I've chosen wrongly, I get to choose again. And there's support for them. And what I'm really impressed with, the partnerships. Imagine police officers sitting at the table, I'm tired of arresting. I want to support you to help lead this, as Rod said, with the DA sitting here trying to do something different and new, and it's working. And I just have an example of young people will come into the office, give clients, go across the street at Popeyes, and feel like our office is a welcome place for them to be. Young men will come and sit at the table, and how can I support you in making right choices and really share what they need. We help them to get back into PCC. One of the gang members, most notorious, was willing to go to mental health to get assistance. He'd asked that I go with him, and the counselor said he could come every day. The trauma was so deep. But to provide an opportunity for people to get healing, and there's another gang member that's well known, he's in jail. He reached out to the probation officer and said, please reach the mother of my 6 children. I don't want them to be like me. So that's what GIFT does, to stop that generational cycle of giving people hope and sometimes teaching them how to hope again. And even with working with employers that would give them that opportunity and scheduling their hours so that they can have an excuse, man, I can't roll with you because I got to go to work tonight. That's what GIFT does. And the partnerships, it really brings us together in a way. We have DHS, we've had Portland Public Schools, therapy, and we had a list of our most impacted gang members' names. And with DHS came to the table, of those 20 names, 18 were on her list. So as people, we're all serving the same folks, so how do we collectively do that? So I just want to thank you for this opportunity to share that it's an awesome program of giving hope, to give opportunity for folks to make different choices and to be successful and give back because they want to. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Julia Mitchell, POIC. I'm the Director of Community Outreach at that organization, and I supervise our gang outreach contracts and the GIFT coordinator contract. And I'd like to say that throughout the past 3-4 years that we've had this contract with in different variations with the city and now with Portland Police Bureau, that this position continues to grow. The work that the GIFT coordinator does continues to grow. It's not that the problems are like growing crazy and out of control. It's that we're figuring out what types of services to bring to the table, who needs to be at the table to help make sure that the services are distributed to these gang-impacted families, not just the young men, but as Brian said, to the mothers, and there's many who don't want to speak up or don't know who to go and talk to figure out where these services are. But the gift coordinator has done an exceptional job with locating the services, establishing relationships with the providers, and making sure that when these families come to the table or make that phone call and say, I need help, that help can be given to them. So I am really enjoying watching how we all work together with the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, the District Attorney's Office, DCJ, DHS, and everyone else that comes to the table to make sure that we look at the family as a whole unit, whether they're one complete unit or if they have different branches of the family, but we're making sure that the family gets the attention that they need in the hopes to end gang violence.
Thank you both. Any questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else want to speak on this item before we take action? Come on up, please.
Yeah, I'm Shedrick Wilkins, and just to add a little bit what Commissioner Fish was saying, I just heard that John Kitzhoffer's son, Logan, coming back from Lincoln City. My ex-wife was there, and she saw the accident. I guess he smoked marijuana, drank some alcohol in the morning, crossed the center line in an RV. Most of the damage was done to him. This is the issue about how even, you know, we generally say gangs are basically minorities with knives and guns. You can also do the same thing if you're drunk behind a car. Equal amount of damage to people. He jeopardized the lives of two people in their 60s in the RV. And my daughter said, she's 18, same age, and said something like, is he all right? And I go, well, this is all his fault. You know, it's not, he's the one that did this stuff. It's funny, too, that sometimes it's a son of a governor who has been elected four times that can have a son that does that. And I had a wayward youth myself. I mean, for 4 years, I wasn't very constructive. But one thing that's important, though, sometimes the honoriness of youth is why I come here, because I think I can change things. You know, people tend to get docile when they're civilized. They don't want to change anything. So it's funny how the youthful spirit allows me to talk. Maybe I should say I don't know anything, but I think there is something concurrent with what's going on with Kitzhoffer's son, Logan. That's an example where I suggested my daughter even try to date him and go to court and make sure he doesn't do that again.
Thank you. Morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And to the smaller item of making this expenditure, obviously, yes. But I think that we need to look on an even broader holistic scope. As this area grows, we need to make sure that we're having conversations about growing the budget for these programs. And if they're not having the effect we want, do they need to be enhanced in scope? Mostly my focus, as I advocate for civil rights and human rights, is on places where the police have gone overboard. But so I'm not as familiar with what is actually being done, boots on the ground, to not just stop gang violence, but to help people who have a high risk of getting involved in gang violence switch paths to productive, satisfying lives. And I hope that any time we find surplus money in the budget, I know we have trouble balancing priorities because we have a homeless and housing crisis, but also to put city money into getting yourselves and student leaders from all the schools meeting with people who, you know, we know that in our lives as adults, it happens just as much as with children, that there are cliques and polarizations. And those things also contribute to gang affiliation. And so if we can put some money and time into getting a broad spectrum of youth to meet at Rosewood, to meet around Jefferson, to have facilitated conversations so that the people that are on the outside and make those choices to go into a gang have a new chance before they're even put on supervision or before they encounter, you know, the GIF program, to, you know, to just be encouraged that, no, it's so tragic to be involved in a situation where you increase the level of violence in your community. And the fact that we only have a limited amount of resources to help people see another way is sad. So I just hope that in addition to approving support and expansion for GIF, we'll also always be mindful of ways that we can make opportunities and spaces for people to make to change a bad choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, let's take a vote, please. This is an emergency ordinance.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank everybody who's working in the GIF program. It sounds like it's very, well, I know it's very necessary, tackling issues around intergenerational poverty, intergenerational gang involvement, intergenerational failure to achieve educational outcomes or employment are problems that we wrestle with every day. So I think by taking this intergenerational perspective and focusing on people who really want to make a difference, not only for themselves but for their families, is right on. So thank you very much. Aye.
Novick?
Really appreciate the work and appreciate everybody's testimony. And I also just wanted to tell Brian Smith in particular that my wife Rachel says hi, and she really appreciates your work too. Aye.
Thank you for a very constructive hearing. And thank you, District Attorney Underhill, for all your great work in our community. Thank you, Mayor, and to your team for the work that you're doing here. And the numbers are discouraging, but it does seem like we have some approaches that are promising. Aye.
Yeah, every 2 weeks, Antoinette and Tom lead a meeting of often more than 100 people who are in this work together. And I just want to report back. I don't think I've really had a chance to do that with the council, but this particular item is one of those things. But, you know, we've made some investments in getting upstream, as you were talking about, Commissioner Fish, not just in what we're doing in the Parks Bureau, but also in this program and in hiring those five more gang outreach workers. And I'll tell you that the spirit in that room, you know, goes up and down based on what's happened in the last week, whether we're avoiding incidents or cleaning up after terrible incidents of gang violence, or some of each in a typical two-week period. But the encouragement that the council's investment in these programs has given to the people doing the work is huge. I could just sense it in the room that the folks really appreciate the fact that this council gets it, that getting upstream is better. Not only is it less expensive on sort of a cold financial basis, but it's on the human level, of course, it's better. But that it actually works, and that the people that are out there doing the work, whether they're at VOA or POIC or one of our other nonprofit partners, or whether it's one of the public agencies that are obviously working well together, for those folks that are out there doing the work and for the folks on our much stressed gang enforcement team, to hear that the council gets it and wants to spend some more money on doing this kind of work and avoiding arresting people and sending them to jail, it's hugely encouraging to the people that are doing the work. So I just wanted to take this moment to report back to you as budgeters that the folks that are out there trying to make a difference and actually making a difference in doing this work were really given a lot of heart by that. And this is putting money where our mouths are. So I'm glad that we get to do that today. Thank you all for good work. Aye. Keep it up, please. Thank you all.